Welcome to Global Talk, a foreign affairs podcast from the national newspaper in Abu Dhabi. In today's episode, we're talking to our Middle East correspondent, Josh Wood, about the situation in the Syrian city of Aleppo. Rebel fighters recently broke through a weeks-long government siege of opposition-held parts of the city, and both sides are now setting themselves up for what is being billed as the Great Battle for Aleppo. Josh is based in Beirut, but has been keeping a close eye on events across the border and will be helping us to better understand what is really going on the ground. The line can be a little bad at times, but please stick with us. So first off, Josh, can you explain for us why Aleppo is so important to both the opposition and the regime?
Well, before the war, Aleppo was Syria's largest city, and it was also the country's main commercial hub. So it has a lot of significance just due to its size and its role it's played in Syria's history. For the rebels particularly, it's important as it's their main metropolitan hub that they've held. A lot of the other cities they've held over the course of the war have been recaptured and they no longer control them. It's also very close to the border with Turkey, which logistically allows them to turn it into a hub for their fighters if they have access to that Turkish border and arms coming across.
And opposition fighters broke through a weeks-long government siege of the city and have now launched a campaign to take the whole of Aleppo. How realistic is this, do you think?
It's hard to tell right now. There's a lot of euphoria among the rebels once they broke through that siege, and I think they're trying to capitalize on that momentum and go forward. All we've seen right now is an announcement. It's going to be hard to retake the rest of the city. Aleppo's divided east and west right now, east with the rebels, the west with the government forces. In the west, you have north of 1 million civilians as well, probably about 1.5 million people there, in addition to all the pro-government fighters. The government is also backed by the Syrian Air Force and Russian Air Force, who have capabilities that the rebels do not have, and the rebels do not really have a way to stop them from bombing them. So it'll be a very tough fight for that. The other thing is they've technically broken through the siege, but they opened up a very narrow, small passage in the southwest corner where they're surrounded to get into Aleppo. When you open up a small passage, it's very susceptible to being recaptured, and even if it's not recaptured, coming under constant attack and shellfire, which potentially makes it a siege-like condition already if you can't physically move down through those roads. The one thing that the rebels do have going for them right now is this momentum and the potential now to besiege government forces in western Aleppo. When they cut through and broke the siege on Saturday, they cut off the government's main supply line going to their troops in west Aleppo. So now both sides are kind of taking these not ideal kind of back routes to get weapons and food and any other kind of supplies to their forces.
You make the point that the rebels' wins maybe aren't as huge as they've sort of been making out. But do you think the government expected them to make even that kind of comeback?
It's hard to tell. I mean, the government, generally, the image they portray is they're always in complete control of the situation. The situation did look extremely dire for the rebels in eastern Aleppo up until this siege was broken. They were trapped there with around 300,000 civilians. You know, in recent times, they've had no water, even electricity. Obviously, access to food and stuff was cut off. When the government forces brought eastern Aleppo under siege around mid-July, it looked like it was just, you know, going to be a matter of time if they could starve them out. Then obviously we had this huge push that came from outside of the city to break through.
And you mentioned a couple of times about how the rebels breaking through the siege has really boosted morale, and that's kind of the biggest gain, if you like. But has that impact been very localized, or has it had an impact throughout opposition forces across the rest of the country?
Yeah, I think the breaking of the siege in Aleppo has really energized rebel forces across the country. You even see this kind of euphoria spreading to other places. Here in Lebanon, in the city of Tripoli, people who are aligned with the rebels were handing out sweets in the street and firing off fireworks all night when it happened. In Syria, though, it's going to be interesting to see how long this kind of moment of unity and euphoria lasts. Of course, this was, while it was being portrayed as a rebel victory, the people who did the fighting was a coalition called Jaish al-Fatah, which is led by Jabhat Fatah al-Sham, which was, until late last month, Jabhat al-Nusra, al-Qaeda's branch in Syria. This group, and Jabhat al-Nusra in particular, are quite at odds with a lot of Syrian rebels. And so it's going to be interesting to see if there's a moment of sobriety that comes when they see that these guys kind of are the new power brokers in the city of Aleppo. And also, if they come to a moment where they realize that they really need these guys. I mean, it raises the question, could the siege of Aleppo have ended without the involvement of Jabhat al-Nusra? And the answer is maybe not. They have a lot of forces. They fight very well. They use tactics like suicide bombings, which really help gain territory, which other groups aren't willing to use.
What kind of support does Jabhat Fatah al-Sham have amongst civilians in the city?
It's difficult to tell. I mean, Jabhat al-Nusra, or Jabhat Fatah al-Sham, as they call themselves now, they take a very different approach than, say, ISIS does. They do have harsh rule in some of the areas they control, but not to the degrees we've seen in the Islamic State. They come from a strain that's much more about trying to build relationships with local people on the ground, providing them services, security, food, all these kinds of things that are quite lacking in a war zone. Since their outset, it's really been a mission of theirs to try and win the local population on board. Of course, there'll be people who dissent and stuff. They're ideally positioned, though, to get a lot of people on board. Right now, they're the liberators of Aleppo. If they can provide food, water, safety for the people in Aleppo, then I think they'll get some support. Aleppo is a city right now that is completely cut off from running water. The UN says that 2 million people are without water in the city. Massive risks in the summer right now for waterborne diseases. People turn to, you know, unsafe water sources. It's a population under siege that if you can help them and make their lives a little bit better, you know, you stand to win hearts and minds.
And do you think this approach is going to make it more difficult for the government, if it does recapture areas from the rebels in Aleppo, is it going to make it more difficult to win back the hearts and minds of the civilians?
The way I see it is that the government's going to have that problem with any areas they capture. A lot of the people who remain living in rebel areas, from, you know, my experience speaking to these people, they side to some degree with the opposition. If they're not formal supporters, even if they, you know, they're very offended by the way all the rebel militias act, they still are against Assad, and that's why they live in these areas. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a problem no matter what.
And the Syrian army is claiming to have inflicted heavy losses on the rebels in this fight. How true is this? And if it is accurate, can the rebels sustain these levels of casualties going forward?
The government numbers that they're giving for the casualties are higher than what that other sources are giving. But yes, I mean, the rebels did seem to incur losses going into Aleppo, as would be expected, trying to break this major siege. The government has also spread a lot of misinformation. They, on Saturday, back when the rebels broke through, the government's line was that the videos and photos everybody around the world was seeing were fabricated to try and boost rebel morale and scare government troops and scare civilians in Syria. Whether the rebels can sustain losses like this, if they have a line open to Aleppo, they can get reinforcements in from outside, which was the main problem beforehand. If they can get reinforcements, they had a better chance. But on paper, I mean, the rebels are always not quite looking as good as the government because they don't have the access to air power. Also in Aleppo, after the rebels broke through the siege, the government has moved to try and confront this aggressively. They've moved in a lot of their own reinforcements. Additionally, they've moved in fighters from Hezbollah, and the reports that Iraqi Shia militia units have also moved in to back government forces. So both sides right now are kind of preparing for a very major showdown.
So I actually wanted to ask you next about this showdown that you referred to. Everyone's setting it up to be this great battle for the city, the rebels, observers and the media. But what do you foresee actually happening? Do you think either side can really make that much advance for the foreseeable future? Or do you think we're going to see more or less a stalemate?
My own gut feeling is that we're not going to see either side take over the positions of the other right now. I don't think we're going to see a fall of West Aleppo. I think we're going to see a fall of East Aleppo, just because I mean, when we start talking about the city proper, the center of the city where this front lawn runs down through, it's densely packed. It's very difficult fighting conditions. We've had a relative stalemate in this area for years. Urban fighting is a very difficult thing. I mean, look at the city where I'm in, where I live, Beirut. I mean, we had a front line that barely moved through the city center for 15 years. That's just the reality of urban warfare. I think right now, though, they're going to try and maneuver, try and cut each other off. So for the government, that means trying to close up this gap in southwest Aleppo, where the rebels broke through in the siege. For the rebels, that means trying to retake their what was previously their primary supply route, which is in the northwest corner of the city. So I think they're going to try and cut each other off in those places. If either the government or the rebels can successfully besiege the other one, I mean, you could see them trying to starve each other out, which obviously could end things a lot sooner if that's successful. But as we've seen, siege tactics will only lead to the other side trying to break those more quickly. Now, if the rebels do succeed in kind of cutting off government force in West Aleppo, we could see new efforts towards towards peace talks, which collapsed back in April. The problem, of course, with the peace talks is always that the Syrian government refused to talk about the political future of Bashar al-Assad, who the rebels want to go. But now, even if they did somehow come to the table for peace talks again, the problem is that, Jabhat al-Nusra, their prominent position in Aleppo, could effectively block that, as this is a group that is explicitly excluded from any peace talks in any political settlement in Syria.
And just going back to the fighting on the ground lastly, what do you think is going to be the humanitarian fallout from all of this?
Well, right now the humanitarian fallout looks pretty bad. I mean, the UN has been warning for a long time now. They haven't been able to get aid into Aleppo just because there haven't been pauses in fighting. Now they're warning that 2 million people are without water, running water in the city, which raised the risk of disease. Right now, the routes going into both rebel-held Aleppo and government-held Aleppo are extremely dangerous. And they're not the kind of things that, aid organization, the UN's going to be able to get food convoys into right now. So it remains a very dire situation. Just before going on the call, I saw that Russia said that they're going to have 3-hour ceasefires per day as far as, Russian jets not bombing. But, I mean, that still doesn't really help the situation too much. The UN's still been calling for, weekly 48-hour ceasefires to get aid in. Until we see one side open up some of these access points to make them a lot safer, or they come to some kind of temporary ceasefire agreement, the humanitarian situation is going to be quite dire.
You can follow our coverage of the fighting in Aleppo and the wider Syrian war at thenational.ae/world. And you can follow us on Twitter at thenatworld. Thanks for listening.